Coming up on the show today, Sally and I discuss online Bible study and all the tools available to those who'd like to try it out. Sally shares her excitement over the newest Swiss Army knife. We talk about our picks as usual and all kinds of other good stuff. Coming up next.
This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to the show, the Wells Tech Podcast for January 18th, 2012. This is episode 219. And joining me on episode 219 is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you yet again to talk technology and ministry, one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah, two of my favorite subjects.
There you go.
And we, for those of you new to the show, and I assume we get new listeners, hopefully every show. We do talk tech and ministry, and we try and pick some topics that have broad appeal, but also occasionally some that are very focused. And I think the topic of today does have maybe that broader appeal and maybe a growing trend within the Synod. I think everybody who is at least familiar with technology and what it can do, especially web technologies, have thought about online Bible study and how the digital world in which we live can help us both communicate about the Bible but also learn it. And that's kind of the focus of the show today, how we can get people together around Bible study in a digital way.
And I think there's lots of applications for this. I was just thinking as you were talking, Martin, about congregations whose members live a great distance mm-hmm. from the church, and the fact that you don't have to come into church maybe a 50-mile drive or something. And,
right.
you know, that's not unheard of in today's metro society, that people are living a great distance away, and being able to connect online mm-hmm. Can really add a lot to their spiritual well-being.
Yep, people connect online all the time about all kinds of different things. Why not Bible study? My daughter is in exactly that boat down in Indiana. She is probably an hour or so away from church, 50 miles,
wow.
60-mile drive, and they've started a women's Bible study that meets every Saturday. So right now she gets in the car, and drives on Saturday. So she's got a two-hour round trip, and she feels it's important. But there's maybe potential to either enhance that or maybe add to that that concept of a Bible study by using some of these digital tools. And it doesn't just have to be kind of a standalone Bible study. It can be augmented material for a Sunday morning Bible study. It can be, like I mentioned, a ladies group or a men's group or some kind of affinity group. Even catechism class, as they're dealing with distance students. This is something we're doing on the Synod level, too, with the LATE group, the Latin American Educators Group, as they're using distance technologies to train seminarians, people interested in doing ministry. So it's the tools are there. So we thought we would just spend a little bit of time talking about some of those tools, and maybe there is some application there for you in your church or school or situation to use them.
So maybe a good place to start is to think of, kind of narrow down exactly what does digital Bible study look like? And that's a hard question.
Sure.
It's not something you can just nail down that easily.
Mm-hmm.
It can take a lot of different flavors. It could be that you do some video streaming of Bible study and maybe have chat sessions around that.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that you have your traditional Bible study maybe on a Sunday morning, and then throughout the week have a discussion forum of some flavor where you can talk about topics that are offshoots of that Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be that you post some video content and have a discussion around that. So
right.
Just a mixture of communication channels and media for digital worship or Bible study
right.
Enrichment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So lots of different approaches, and some of the, as we go through some of the tools, we'll recognize that some are better at that than others. So maybe we should start with those a tool category that we'll call group discussion or sharing. And the one tool that immediately comes to mind, because I'm most familiar with it and I've used it for this kind of thing, is Google Groups. Google Groups is essentially a online email list, and it works kind of like a discussion board as well, but it's essentially done through email. So you join the, you set up a group, so there's a group administrator, you invite people to subscribe to the group, and then when an email is sent to the group email address, there's a central address that gets created, then that email, whatever it is, gets sent out to everybody who has subscribed. And they can go back and forth, and when you respond to the email, it goes out to the entire group. You have different options that you can use. You can make it a private group or a public group. You can tell the service how often you want to receive these emails, whether it's instantaneously once an email goes in, I want it to see it right away, or you can have a daily digest or a weekly digest of all the information. The one downside to just using Google Groups, first of all, it's free, but the one downside is you can no longer store documents within the group. So they used to be able to do that. They got kind of got out of that business essentially in this area. So you can't store docs there, but there are other workarounds for that.
Sure, there are. You certainly could make use of Dropbox or Google Docs to upload documents in a public way, share them publicly, and then just add links to your emails or whatever discussion.
Right.
Option that you're using.
Yep.
There are other options besides Google Groups. Comes to mind right away to either use Google Plus or Facebook, which are
right.
two of the very popular social media sharing sites these days. And you can privatize to some extent. You know, I guess nothing on the internet is completely private,
mm-hmm.
but you can have private groups on Facebook. You could have a circle in Google Plus mm-hmm. where you share just with that particular circle of people, and even create hangouts where you have video chat going
yep.
and different things like that. So.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the potential of Google Plus for this activity because it's a rich experience. You can embed videos. You can put links in there. You can put pictures in there. And you have a threaded discussion around a topic. And then just this whole concept of Hangouts themselves. I haven't used them a lot, but from what I've read and what I've seen, it looks really easy to use and nicely done. I think you can have at least up to 10 people now, so you see all their videos. The audio seems pretty solid, so I'd like to see a group use this and give me their feedback on what their experiences were. So you could potentially start a topic. And then maybe establish a time where you have a hangout each week, a half hour, whatever, and talk about the discussion. I think that's a great thing. Facebook kind of the same way, except you don't really have the video sharing. You can do one-to-one video with the Skype add-in. But Facebook is also a great way to do that, where you can kind of control the environment. You can share links, embed pictures, those kinds of things.
And Facebook does have a doc component, so potentially you could collaborate on documents in a private Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be using a private Facebook group for our ladies' prayer organization here at St. John's this year. Kind of taking it to a new level, trying to open up new avenues and engage more people in the congregation. And there may be some that do this versus do the traditional prayer group that we've had in the past.
Yep.
So
yep.
we're going to give it a try.
The last item in this area is kind of old school, quote-unquote old school. You could use a blog. So the discussion leader, whoever that would be, would create a blog post. They would seed the blog with some questions maybe or discussion starter kinds of statements. And then the comments section of the blog could be basically the dialogue about that particular discussion topic, that Bible study topic. So, and blogs are very feature rich these days. You can obviously embed content and videos and those kinds of things. So that's just another option that many congregations already have at their disposal. Blogs are a little more public. It's a little more difficult to create a private blog, but that's an option as well.
Sure. I was just going to say, if you wanted to set up logins for each person, you could privatize it to some extent, but maybe not as easy as using an existing Facebook or Google Plus login.
And I can't think of a whole lot of reasons, other than maybe a prayer circle or something like that, like you're talking about, where you would need to make it super private. The Bible study concept is something worth sharing. And if you get some trolls in there or whatever, you can kind of moderate them out as necessary. But good stuff. What's next?
Well, next we want to talk about the live potential.
Sure.
If you want to share real time, either desktop or screen sharing, say you're going through a particular PowerPoint, slideshow, or whatever it may be, you could have some tools for that. Or you could even do the video streaming using something like the Ustream iPad app, where you just turn on video and go live. We've been doing that with our Bible class lately at St. John's on Sunday morning. But yeah, back to the desktop sharing concept, you certainly could use a tool like Join.me or Vue. We actually talked about that way back on show 159 about different desktop sharing resources. And we talked with Vicar Donald Tillsbury. At the time, he was leading some distance catechism students.
Right.
So another use of Bible study at a distance is when you have catechism students that can't make it to class every week, then maybe they could join in with a tool like this, pair it with something like Skype for the free audio connection, and you've got a live session, basically.
Mm-hmm. Some of these include audio even, or at least an audio conferencing solution. It's not usually toll-free, so you get the long-distance charges, but that's usually not a problem today with cell phone minutes and such. But Join.me View, that's V-Y-E-W, some of these crazy Web 2.0 spellings. Mikogo is another one, Mikogo. Join.me is a great tool, I think, really simple to use. You don't even need anything, any setup. You just start a Join.me, people log in, and away you go. So lots of tools here that are very, very simple to use. And most computers these days can handle this, and most computers are being sold now with decent microphones and good video cameras. So lots of options there.
And back in the day, Martin, back on episode 179, we covered a whole lot of other Bible teacher resources, not just the tools for doing the technology side of Bible classes, but also a ton of resources available online for developing and teaching Bible classes. So if you want to tune in to episode 179, it's called April Showers Bible Teacher Resources, you'll find lots more that'll be applicable to today's topic.
Yeah, just last spring we talked about this. So excellent. Speaking of online Bible study and using live streaming, that's our interview today. We're talking with Pastor Tom Koch from Johnson City, Tennessee, who he and a few guys down in the South Atlantic District got together and said, wouldn't it be great if we could provide some online Bible studies presented by learned people like seminary professors and the like, who could lead a class, and then different groupings of congregations could gather together online and view it and then respond and interact. And that's basically the concept of what Tom is doing in conjunction with the Synod's Board for Adult Discipleship. They use a technology called Livestream, and let's listen to our conversation with Tom as he talks about how they got started and about some things that are going on right now that you might want to take advantage of. We're very happy and pleased to have joining us this morning Pastor Tom Koch from Living Word Lutheran Church in Johnson City, Tennessee. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Martin. It's great to be with you.
Thanks for very, very much. Thank you for the time that you're taking and sharing some thoughts with us on an exciting project. But maybe before we get to the Bible study project that you have going, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you serve, what you like to do for fun.
Hey, I'm pastor at Living Word Lutheran in Johnson City, and I've served here my entire ministry. I graduated from the seminary in 1992.
Okay.
And at that point, we had about 20 people who were gathered in the Upper East Tennessee area who were Wells members, and asked the mission board if they could start a congregation. And I was blessed to be the first pastor who was assigned to the group. Mm-hmm. And we have since grown to about 270 members and have daughtered a congregation in Morristown, Tennessee, which is about 70 miles down the road. And
right.
Just have had a whole lot of fun. The Lord is always good, yeah. But sometimes you get the honor of seeing his blessings more readily than at other times. And
right.
We've been well blessed to see his blessings real clearly. My wife, Beth, was a graduate from what was called Dr. Martin Luther College in those days, and mm-hmm. She now teaches, or she is a teacher's assistant in one of the local grade schools in the special ed department. We have four kids, a senior in college at the University of Tennessee. We have a daughter who's a freshman up at Martin Luther College, a son who's in his junior year at Luther Prep School, and an eighth grader who's still at home. Our family is very much a sports family. We love football, basketball, baseball, soccer, golf, tennis, you name it. We will we'll play it or watch it and enjoy it. And so that I do for some of my fun stuff is I do a lot of coaching. I have soccer and Little League baseball for years, and just recently have taken up soccer refereeing as a way to stay in the game a little
okay.
bit more.
Nice.
Kids have grown.
Very good. Now, the reason that we wanted to get you on the show is our focus of this show is actually digital Bible study and how congregations are kind of tipping their toes in the water and figuring out that there are tools available to them to do this online or maybe to extend face-to-face classes. But you kind of were behind, or at least you and some cohorts down in the South Atlantic District, of a concept of taking this a little bit broader and using some digital tools to do online Bible study. Maybe tell us a little bit about the program that you have going on now and how all that came to be.
Well, I've always thought it would be really neat if we could get more of our really wise pastors, professors, teachers in front of more people. Yeah, I was blessed to go to the seminary and be able to study the Word of God under some guys like Professor Brug and et cetera, who just have such a depth of knowledge of the Scriptures and are able to teach it so well. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be cool if we could somehow get those people connected to thousands of Wells members throughout the Synod? Mm-hmm. And that's where the idea germinated. And what we have just begun doing is using a service called Livestream. And thank you to you, by the way, for finding that. We are now beaming Bible classes across the Synod where people can connect to livestream.com. And the professor or pastor or teacher will teach the Bible study, and you get to hear the professor and see him or see his PowerPoint and hear his explanations, depending on how he wants to do it. And it's a chance for us as a synod to grow in the Word of God, which is most important. And I think there's a kind of a neat fellowship aspect to it as mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. to know that we are studying the Word of God with people from all over the nation, literally at the same time, is, I think, pretty cool.
So the concept really is to have the professor, pastor, whoever, presenting, and then have groups of people, usually, although it wouldn't, nothing would prevent an individual from tuning in, but the idea is to really have groupings of congregation members or whoever gathered around a screen or whatever at different locations and kind of make this both a spiritual growth opportunity, but also a fellowship opportunity.
Yeah, and a fellowship opportunity in a couple ways. But, for example, here in Johnson City, what we do is on the nights we have this study, we have a PowerPoint projector and speakers set up in one of our adult Sunday school classrooms. And when the pastor or professor comes on, we beam him live onto the screen. We have a gathering of 15, 20 people or so who are there. They hear the professors or pastors teaching the teaching. And then usually the professor also will prepare some thought questions, some application questions, and then for example, he may teach for 10 minutes or so, and then he'll say, okay, now on your own, discuss these three questions, or look at these Bible passages and explore further, and give us a chance at a local level to be studying the Word of God and to be digging into it together. At the same time, as that's going on, we have the opportunity to use the chat feature on live stream and send in via instant messages questions or comments to the presenter. And what's one of the neat things about this is, as we're studying there in Johnson City, Tennessee, there are brothers and sisters of ours who are down in Atlanta or Miami, Florida, or Illinois or Wisconsin, who are sending in their questions and comments too. And so there's a really neat thing to say, well, look at that. There's a question that just came in from Atlanta. There's a question that just came in from Texas, which I think maybe will help us as a church body just to appreciate our fellowship maybe even a little bit more.
Right.
So give us a sense of how it's gone so far in terms of numbers of people that have been involved and what their reactions have been to the program.
Well, we've done two sessions so far. The first session was specifically set up just for the South Atlantic District because we wanted to do kind of a guinea pig series to try to start to work bugs out and things like that. And we had about 20 to 25 congregations who were involved, as well as some individuals. I think the high that we had connected at any one time was about 40. And Professor Brug taught five sessions on end times and what the truths in Scripture regarding the end times. And it was very well received. The second session was Pastor John Schrader, and that was the first one in which we went synod-wide and opened it up for everybody in the synod. And so he taught both at 7:30 Eastern Time and 9:30 Eastern Time, so that at 7:30 Eastern Time, the Eastern Time Zone people and the Central Time Zone people could be involved, and at 9:30 Eastern Time, the Western two time zones could hopefully be involved and more easily. And we had, I think, our high for the night was about 65 or 66. He taught a three-session course. And so the feedback we've gotten has been really positive, that people have appreciated the opportunity to sit at the feet of some of our outstanding pastors and professors and learn and grow in the Word of God. Secondly, that opportunity, it was interesting. There was some comments back and forth in the chat box from people who were online. Oh, are you the Joe Smith who used to live in and so people made some connections with each other in addition to the study and education aspect of it, which was neat. There have been some glitches. We've learned that this technology is still relatively new, and we've had some times where we've had some little pauses in as the pastor or professor is teaching along. There's been some times where we've had some little pauses, and that's a little frustrating. And we're going to try something a little different with President Zarling's upcoming study, where we are going to have him record his sections and then just push play at the appropriate times. Then he'll be live during the question and answer times. And we'll see if that will make a difference. I don't know that it will, but we're going to see if that will make any kind of a difference. It may simply be that we're just at the point where the technology is still early enough that we just have to have it become a little bit more perfected.
Yep. There have been, I'm sure, some neat stories, but one that maybe you can share, Tom, or I can share, and maybe John Schrader didn't share this with you, the little difficulty he had in getting to his microphone at the appropriate time. Did he tell you that incident?
Was that when he locked himself out of the room?
Yes. I don't think he'd mind us telling that story.
Pastor Schrader taught the 7:30 session, And he stayed online till about, I don't know, I guess it was 9 o'clock, something like that, answering questions and discussing things with people who were interested. And then came back on at 9:15 to set the tone for the West Coast time zones. And he, during that time, he needed to quickly use the restroom. And so he stepped out of his office, and the door shut behind him, which would be no big deal, except that the door was locked and his keys were inside the office. So Mr. Schrader actually had to break down his office door in order to get back to his computer in time to teach the 9:30 session.
That is dedication.
Yes, it is.
He's a big guy, so he could do that. But
yeah, he put his shoulder to it, apparently.
Oh, dear. So that's the kind of dedication you can expect from the presenters on the for this
Absolutely.
Program. So what is coming up next? You've got a session starting, actually, when this airs, probably this evening. What, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have Mark Zarling, who is the president at Martin Luther College, and he is going to present for 4 Wednesdays. He'll start tonight. That's the 18th of January at 7:30 Eastern and or 9:30 Eastern. It'll be the same session at both times. And he is going to present the amazing grace of God as seen in God's amazing names. And each of the 4 nights, he's going to walk us through one of the names for God and allow us to see how we learn about God and his wonderful grace through those names. So it should be excellent. And by the way, one thing I forgot to mention earlier is that the presenters have so far all produce study guides as well, and those study guides are available on the Wells Connect website on the Adult Discipleship page under Online Bible Studies. And so if you go to that Wells Connect Online Bible Study page, you'll be able to find a downloadable study guide that you can use as well.
Very good. And the cost is free currently, correct?
Yeah, we are Adult Discipleship had some grant money that we are using to cover the cost of this, and we're not sure how it's going to go in the future. If we can keep it a freebie, we will. We may get to the point where we may need to do it by a subscription type thing, where you would get a code that you would type in when you got to live stream that would allow you to access it. In order to just continue to support it. So, and if we do that, I'm sure it'll be a relatively reasonable amount of money. But that decision's yet off in the future. We want to see how this first full year goes. We have 3 sessions lined up for this year. Pastor Zarling will start us off tonight, and we'll teach for 4 weeks, and then we'll take off a couple of months during Lent. During the Easter season, Pastor Don Patterson is going to teach a Bible study on the life of Joseph, the Old Testament Joseph, with his being sold into slavery in Egypt and all that, and just talk about how God works in the lives of his people to accomplish his work. And then in the fall, and we haven't nailed down the exact time of this yet, we're going to have President Paul Wentlandt from our seminary is going to teach a class, and the contents of that have yet to be determined. But so you can look for 3 sessions this year, and after the end of this year, we'll make a judgment as to, is that about right? Should we do more? Should we do less? And should be neat. You know, I think this has so many opportunities for application. You know, you think about when great events happen in our nation, or troubling events, say like 9/11, for example. You know, that might be a time when President Schrader might like to be able to address the entire Wells. Mm-hmm. Well, this would be a way that could actually get done, and it could get done in a fairly rapid fashion, where you know, email notification could be sent out to all the congregations that President Schrader is going to be online at this particular time and tune in. And I just think it opens up some opportunities for us to address things in a way that are timely, give encouragement to each other through the Word of God, in addition to these more structured Bible studies that we are doing.
Great. Tom, certainly blessings on your continuing work there. I think it's a great idea, and I've been watching it closely and trying to assist wherever I can. I think this has, as you mentioned, a lot of possibilities, both from the spiritual growth perspective, but just, you know, letting people, as you mentioned, letting people know that, hey, there's other members around the, not just our country, around the world, that can join together in this way. So neat opportunities.
Absolutely so. And again, thank you, Martin, for your help on the technical side. Marty Mielke and Ben Peterson and Steve Prawl are my adult discipleship group in the South Atlantic who've been working on it. And we just added Dave Panitsky to that mix. And just appreciate the work that everybody has put into this. I'm not a techie guy at all. And so I completely rely on the expertise of people like yourself. And but what a cool opportunity for us to grow the Word of God together.
So if you are interested in tuning in, livestream.com/Wells Adult Discipleship is the place to go. And there are probably links there to the online Bible study, the printed materials as well.
Perhaps even a simpler way is to just go to the Wells website, go to the Adult Discipleship section on the Wells website under Connect, and you'll find a link right there that'll take you to Livestream. You'll also find the study guides will be posted up there. So
awesome.
Real simple.
Have fun tonight, Tom, and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks, Sally. Blessings to y'all, and stay warm.
Yes, absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our thanks to Tom for taking the time and for working through this idea. I think it's going to be a real blessing to those people who participate.
And we'll have links in the show notes if you want to join tonight's Bible study that's kicking off with President Mark Zarling from Martin Luther College. You certainly can follow the links available on the Wells Tech website.
Very good. Shall we move on to news and tech? Sal, you found something that you're going to go right out and buy.
Putting it on my shopping list for sure. I would say this was my favorite cool item that came out of the recent Consumer Electronics Show that was held last week, and it is a Swiss Army knife, of all things. Doesn't sound real techy, but perhaps you read about the fact that the Swiss Army Knife Company is putting a 1 terabyte USB drive in its newest version of a Swiss Army knife, and you can have one of these for a mere $2,000. Tiny little solid-state drive, no moving parts involved, and amazing technology that they've squeezed into this USB drive and packaged it on a Swiss Army knife. I read a few jokes that said, yeah, and the TSA will confiscate it as you're going through the flight screenings and things, but hopefully that's not the case, and this baby can be a real benefit to you for a mere $2,000.
Well, there's a couple thoughts that come to mind. First of all, if you break it down, it's really only $2 per gig. So that's not bad.
Not bad.
Also, the neat part about this is the fact that they can actually do this, and that speaks well for solid-state drives and the ability to get more storage on cell phones and tablets and computers and make them more energy efficient and thinner, those kinds of things. So that's definitely where the industry's headed, and we saw a lot of that at this year's CES, at least as I read, the whole concept of ultrabooks, these thin driveless, solid-state drive packing machines that are really good, really fast. I think for most of the people in our listening audience, these ultrabooks are really sufficient for what you need to do, and nicely portable too. So it's good news.
Good stuff. Yeah. The future is now.
Future is now. If you have $2,000. Right. Tips or picks of the week, Sally.
Well, this week I'm going to do one for the teachers in the audience, and it is a video game platform design site called GameStar Mechanic. I first learned about GameStar Mechanic last year during the National STEM Project Contest. STEM stands for Science, Technology, Education, and Mathematics, or Engineering and Mathematics. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of people out there that are promoting children getting involved in STEM as part of the school curriculum. And so there's contests and all kinds of exciting things to turn kids on to math and science techniques. And one of the ways that they're engaging students these days is with video game design. I've talked on the shows in the past about using Scratch to do your own programming. GameStar Mechanic is an online tool. And teachers can sign up for a free account and add their students and give the students logins to the site. And basically, you are awarded with sprites and different types of moves and things, and you can build different types of video game platforms. The reason this came to my attention again this year is because of a new blog that I found called Kevin's Meandering Mind, where a teacher, and I don't know if I have his last name, I know his first name's Kevin, has posted about a video game design wiki that he set up for his students. And he challenged them not just to go to GameStar Mechanic and build a video game, but he gave them a direction to build a video game about geology and solving some geological problem. And they created some really amazing games. You'll have to check out the show notes for links to some of their sample video games. One was Saving Hawaii from the Volcanoes and all kinds of cool stuff. And so they're learning, you know, analytical concepts, problem solving. They're very engaged by the technology. I've been using it with my 6th through 8th graders, and I can't get them off the site. They're on it while they're at home. They're coming back to school and showing their friends. They can publish their own games and get feedback from people that play the games on the website. Mm-hmm. And GameStar Mechanic makes it really easy for you to get started as a teacher. They have a whole section of their website dedicated to teacher resources. There's communities on Twitter and Facebook and Edmodo where you can discuss using GameStar Mechanic in the classroom. And they have a blog dedicated to teachers as well. And there is also currently this year's National STEM Video Game Challenge going on. So you can get your kids engaged in this contest where they can win some really cool prizes and be learning these video game coding techniques as well. Mm-hmm. So lots and lots of links to share with you. And this pick comes with a guarantee. Your students will love getting engaged with GameStar Mechanic. It's rated for 4th through 9th grade. I haven't tried it below 6th grade myself, but I'm guessing that my younger kids would get into it as well.
So do your sons do this too?
Oh, do they ever? Yeah. They are enjoying it. As a matter of fact, one son actually laid down the $6 to upgrade his account to premium so he could get more sprites and capabilities on his account.
That's
so
serious.
Yeah. Put the money on the line.
Cool. So. That's cool. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Lots of fun.
My pick is actually a rerun, and I did a look up on our Wells Tech show notes page, and I recommended Evernote back in September of 2008.
Well,
that was our first year of podcast, episode 36.
Wow.
And Evernote is now at version 2. It's taken them a while, and they've kind of had an interesting history. There was a recent article in Inc. magazine about the founders and some of the trials and tribulations they went through to get to where they are, and they almost went out of business, et cetera, et cetera. But, boy, they are going strong at this point, and to get on the cover of Inc., that's quite an accomplishment as well. But Evernote is one of my favorite productivity tools, and I've just recently been getting into it more and more, and I think we talk a lot about tools like Dropbox and PogoPlug and SugarSync and SkyDrive and MobileMe and those things that put your documents in the cloud. Evernote does that and more, at least in my opinion. There's a free account which does a lot of the same things that the premium does, but the premium gives you a little bit more bandwidth. They only charge you by the amount you upload, and it will basically store almost anything. It'll store pictures, it'll store documents, PDFs, photos, audio files, all those things it'll store in the cloud and allow you to tag them and categorize them and move them around into different folders and then sync them across all computers. So it's a little bit different than some of the other tools where you can have as and this installed on as many computers as you like. It'll keep everything in sync and everything in the cloud. The premium version runs about $50 a year. That gives you 1 gigabyte of uploading a month, which is plenty. I've never hit that. And then it also does some OCR on any PDFs that you upload. So if you upload a PDF or even an image, so you take a picture of something with text on it, it will scan that and then make it totally searchable, and it works really well. You can all of these tools are available on your phone as well. That usually doesn't download the contents to your phone, although you can have some local storage through the Evernote utility. But all of this is all of your documents are going to be available, and it's just a great tool if you want to go more digital. I scan in or take pictures of any receipt. Like I was on the road yesterday down in Indiana doing a seminar for a pastor's conference down in Carmel. And I got receipts from the hotel and from the restaurant or whatever. I took a picture of them with my phone with the Evernote utility, uploaded them to Evernote. I could index it right there, or I could tag it right there, put it in the receipts folder. It indexed it so I could do a search and find those receipts again. I can email those receipts, share those images or files, all kinds of very helpful tools that it provides. And you have unlimited storage. So as long as you don't hit your 1 gigabyte per month, you could just have a ton of stuff up there in all kinds of different formats, and it keeps everything in sync. And one of the neat features with version 2 now is that you can edit the document. So if you have a Word doc that you've uploaded to Evernote, because it stores a local copy, you can just double-click on that. It'll open up in Word. You edit it, and you save it, and it gets synced back to Evernote and all your other computers that use it. So if you've got like a setup where you have an office at church or school and an office at home but on two different computers and you want access to the same files in all locations, this is a great solution for that kind of thing. And then it's always on the web as well. So Evernote.
I'm enjoying listening to your examples there, Martin. I think more of that practical examples really makes it come home to, mm-hmm. you know, how useful that can be. I love their logo. It has an elephant.
Yep.
So,
it remembers everything. It's your brain. It's your brain expanded.
I always joke about the Wells Tech site being my brain because mm-hmm. that's the one where I've stored so many different links and things, and I can usually pull them up from there. But it's almost like an investment. You've got to pick the right tool and be comfortable with it to invest all that you're going to put into it. And
yep.
It's good to know that Evernote has stood the test of time and, you know, is continuing to develop and evolve in a way that's very useful.
Yep. That and Digo are probably my two primary tools at this point because I can do my linking, you know, in Digo. But you can also suck whole web pages in or images on web pages right into Evernote as well with a little plugin. So all kinds of cool stuff.
Definitely. Speaking of mobile devices, if you're brand new to the mobile world and have a new tablet maybe that was under your Christmas tree this year, make sure you've loaded it up with the Wells Online app. Mm-hmm. We will include a link in the show notes to the Wells Online app information. We have a version for iOS as well as Android, and it's going to deliver to you daily devotions and Bible readings. You can get your Wells Tech podcast goodness from the Wells mm-hmm. Online app as well, and lots of other goodies are included. So don't leave home without Wells in your pocket.
And we are working on upgrades to all the apps at this point. It's a slow process since I'm the one that has to do it. So I do it kind of in my free time or, you know, weekends kind of thing. But I hope to upgrade the Android app. We still don't have an app that works on Android tablets, unfortunately. The app that we have on the iOS side does work on iPhones, iPod Touches, and iPads, it's apparently a little more difficult to do that on the Android tablet side because there's so many platforms and so many versions. So, but we are working on it, and we're also working on the ability to do a church locator kind of functionality, and also the yearbook. Hopefully we'll get that online as well.
Very good. You stay busy, don't you, Martin?
I'm trying.
Stay out of trouble that way.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a brand new segment on the Wells Tech podcast in 2012. It's called Our Seven Best. And each month we're going to be featuring a list of our seven best of some category. Mm-hmm. Our February category coming up on February 1st is digital Bible study tools. And we'd like to build this list with your input. So Wells Tech listeners, we're issuing the challenge. Please let us know what your favorite digital Bible study tool is. And you can tell us by any of our different channels. You can write it on our Facebook wall or our Google Plus page. You can tweet us your favorite digital Bible study tools using the #WellsTech hashtag on Twitter. You can email us at wellstech@wells.net or post it on the Wells Tech listserv if you're a member there. And last but not least, you can phone in your comments at 405-4-WELLS. We'd love to have your voice to play on that Seven Best episode on February 1st.
Yep, so we've already got some nominees, and then Sally will get our heads. Sally and I will get our heads together and pick the seven best that that we want to share with the class. Community feedback.
Well, we heard from several people this week, starting with Nate Block, who's the evangelism chairman at New Hope Lutheran Church and Academy in Melbourne, Florida. And Nate wrote and said, I just wanted to offer a quick comment of thanks for the tip off on the Google Places program. Mm-hmm.
This you was talked something about we discussed that last week.
Yeah. Yep. Even with logging in, editing a few things, completing the phone verification, and loading some pictures, it took all of maybe 5 minutes. Mm. Great tip. This is definitely a standard and repeatable practice that every technically disinclined congregation should be encouraged to commit to. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be real techie, but you can make your Google Places listing a lot more meaningful by posting information about your church or school. Check out last week's show notes if you're interested in taking advantage of that.
Nice. Thanks for that work, Sally. That was a great tip.
All right. Next up, we had some DIGO links shared via our Wells Tech DIGO group. We heard from Randy Nepson, who shared some cool links. It was an article on the Communicate Jesus blog about websites for coordinating meal rosters. And what this means is if you have someone who's sick, or perhaps they have a new baby in their family or whatever it might be, and you want to take them a meal, you can coordinate that among the people in your congregation using Food Tidings or TakeThemAMeal.com, two different websites that allow you to use the internet to your advantage in doing that coordination of meals for a family in need.
Very good.
And you had a few DIGO links to share as well, Martin.
Yep. One of them is productivity-based, of course, and this is something I've been using for a long time in Outlook, but you can do this in many mail clients, including Gmail, and that's really the focus of this particular Life Hacker article called Create a Mail Rule or Filter to Track Sent Messages You Want to Follow Up On. This is one of the chief sources of stress for anybody who asks other people to assist them with either tasks or projects. So you send an email. Essentially, you delegate responsibility for doing something to somebody else. And then it kind of goes into this black hole, and you're not quite sure if they have accomplished it or whether they received it or whether they've done it. And you're not always quite sure whether you remembered asking them to do it. So these little tips in this this short blog post tell you how to create a rule or a filter that will create a bucket of these sent mails that you want to delegate and allow you to follow up on them. So you'll just kind of have a list. Mine's called a waiting for list. So anytime I ask somebody to provide something for me or do something for me on which I need to get back before I can do what I need to do, it goes into this waiting for list. And then every day or every week, however often I want to review the list, I can see what's outstanding and what I might need to give a gentle nudge for and follow up on. So great tip there. And the second one I wanted to share was some news coming out of Google where Google has actually improved their offline Gmail support in Chrome. This is what used to be Google Gears, But now they've kind of built it in with HTML5 tools, and there's an app in the Chrome Web Store that will allow you to store more offline Gmail messages than you could before. I think it's up now to 31 days of mail that you can store offline. So if you're a Gmail user, you would have access to the last month's worth of mail in an offline capacity. So if you're without an internet connection, you could still get to 31 days worth of mail. So nice improvement there.
Very good. Lastly, we had a Twitter post from Gail Potratz. She used the pound WellsTech hashtag to share a link to an article by, his name escapes me, David.
David Warlick. David Warlick.
That's him, yes. Warlick. Yeah. Yes. Why couldn't I remember his last name? And I'm looking at his website, and it's not just in my face either. So, oh well. It's called The Page is Dead, Long Live Curriculum. And I had actually scrolled down the article because he's saying the textbook, consisting of printed pages and glued or sewn together and bound in covers, is obsolete. The new environment has radically changed how we learn. It's more dynamic and vibrant, highly personal and yet broadly shared, and almost entirely unforeseen. So these are kind of scary words for me to read. And I think Gail's comment on Twitter was daunting jobs we have as teachers, she means. But what it's saying is that the world is opening up to us, that we can use Web 2.0 tools and the communication channels we have to get information in more real-time bases than we could with a static textbook of days gone by. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a while before the textbooks are dead in Wells classrooms, but
right.
I think we can begin to broaden our horizons using these tools for sure. So, interesting read.
It will be interesting to see how this develops because textbooks are so expensive, and I'm wondering if textbook companies, even though they have to still produce the content, are going to if we're going to realize any savings out of this or not. Whether the subscriptions to these things will be so exorbitant that there won't be any savings there. But it'd be nice to get some Wells teachers on the show and talk about this topic. I think this is really intriguing, especially when he says totally unforeseen. You know, that we don't see this coming. We probably want to pay some attention to this.
Yeah, I was really struck by the number of my friends, my unscientific survey, just reading a post on Facebook, for instance, after Christmas, at how many people got the Kindle Fire for Christmas and wrote things like, I've read 14 books during Christmas holiday, more than I've read in the last 3 years combined or whatever. You know, so I think it really was an explosive adoption this past Christmas season. And people are getting these things in their hands and beginning to grasp the possibilities there. I just had a conversation with my oldest son, and we talked about how we love to hold a book in our hand and smell the pages, you know? So, I mean, there's something to be said for, especially for something you want to reference actually own in the book. So it's an interesting place we are.
There's some pluses and minuses to that. Yeah, I go back and forth, too. I like being digital, and one of the biggest benefits of having a digital reference is searchability.
Right.
That you can enter a search term and find it, whereas you'd have to page and page through a book and you may never find what you're looking for, that method. But I also like the ability to have it open, maybe to annotate. So if we can figure out how to, you know, take notes and have that stick with your content and make that easy to do, you know, I'd be more inclined to say, yeah, I could go digital, you know, with my reference books. But Debbie and I are going through the People's Bible, Romans, on a Kindle through the Kindle app, and it does have annotation abilities, but you know, it's just not there yet. Although we're sticking with that and we're enjoying it because we can both be reading, you know, the same book at the same time without having to pay for multiple copies. So.
Sure.
Next week, Sally, we are going to be talking a little more Google Apps, and Jason Schmidt will be joining us. This is going to be our monthly education technology-focused show, so Jason Schmidt will join us. And we'll be having an interview with WLC professor Joe Dufour who is going to tell us a little bit about a Google Summit that they're going to be having or offering at WLC over the summer to help people get up to speed on some of the Google offerings that might be of value to our schools. So tune in next week for talk about Google Apps. Sally, that's going to be about it for the show. Why don't we close the show with the beautiful music of In His Service, Soul Adorn Yourself with Gladness from their album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Join us again next week.